Hey everyone, Mr. Warren Hayes here, and it's the AEW Dynamite review coming your way right now here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or your favorite podcast feed wherever it is you listen to your audio. It's everywhere that you want to be. Please, credit card companies, don't sue me for saying that. We're going to be reviewing the October 26th edition of AEW Dynamite right now. Before we do, look, you know, the usual stuff. If you enjoy this, if you want more, if you subscribe to the Mr. Warren Hayes Show channel right now, you can do that absolutely right now. Leave a like on the video. And on top of that, if you subscribe to the channel, well, then you'll make sure that you don't miss out on any of the reviews, plus the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper on top of that. So that's always good. And you can do the same thing by following the feed on your favorite podcast application. And why don't you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts? Why don't you leave a 5-star rating on Spotify? Because why, you ask? Why should we do this? Because it helps the channel out a great deal. It helps the podcast grow. So that's a good thing. It's good for me. It's good for you. It's good for everyone. So let's just go ahead and do it, and we're going to do it right now as far as the AEW review goes, talking about the Dynamite that happened on, like I said, October 26th, Norfolk, Virginia, at the Chartway Arena. It's one of those Dynamites I feel like was designed for Warren Hayes. I feel like it was made for me. Great action, minimal nonsense. And look, here's the thing. Maybe just a couple of notes, right, before we actually jump into the matches and whatnot. I feel right now, you know, because that Dynamite hasn't felt this focused and clear directed since in months at this point, since like the summer. Clearly, what was happening backstage was causing confusion, and I think it did end up dribbling onto television at the same time. And really, you could feel at some points lack of focus, lack of direction. Now I feel storylines have purpose. They're focused. You can feel actual story beats week for week, because yes, you know, contrary to what a lot of people might like to tell you, there are stories in AEW. And the wrestling's there on top of that. Like, that's one thing that hasn't changed. Smartly booked matches, finishes that lead to stories, or, you know, as I said, that provide bumps, bring us to different places. You know, I've been appreciative of how the women have been booked, you know, for whatever matches we're getting. I still think that they've been the booking has been very good, because Tony's trying something else out. He's trying something else to get the women over. I think he's been seeing women getting over. I've talked about this. Women getting themselves over based on their in-ring work, as opposed to having promo sessions. Promo time, which hasn't always been to their advantage. And you have women like Jamie Hayter and Willow Nightingale, who have been they've been getting over because of what they've been pulling off in the ring, right? And AEW has a history of this as well. You know, Hikaru Shida and Riho aren't exactly the strongest mic workers, and yet here we are with them, former world champions, able to garner great reactions. Riho, of course, the Paul Slayer, sending NXT packing at every turn. I'm joking, of course, but still, you know, she's still capable of doing that without spending 30 minutes on a microphone in a month. So I think, you know, Tony's trying something different with the booking of the women. I think the experiment is paying off. We'll see how things keep developing. Of course, we would like a little more women's action on the shows. But look, I don't know what's been going on specifically. Of course, I'm not in the locker room. None of us are, as far as I know, unless you are a member of the AEW locker room, which, by the way, shout out. I don't know what's been going on, but look, if putting Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley, Chris Jericho into leadership positions in the company, in the locker room, if all of doing all of these moves have straightened things out, then it was absolutely the best thing to do. Maybe Tony is at a point where he's like, look, I have to delegate. I have to put faith into some other situations here. Some other people who are trying to help me out. Even Rampage, I find, is turning into a sharper show. Of course, they've been doing live Rampages, which I think are always better for some reason. I always feel like the live Rampages are much, much better than the the taped editions for some reason. But this has been good. This has been very good. I think we're on a good track. And yes, there are stories, and I'm going to be talking about those stories in a little bit. Now, as far as the show last night, yeah, I think we should start off with the lead at this point, which is, you know, the obvious return. Well, the video package of the Elite vanishing, which means that they're coming back, if that makes any sense to you. You know, we all saw this video package of the Jacksons and Kenny Omega, you know, in the early days of AEW, and then suddenly, you know, they're being Thanos'd out. And then, you know, so they would not be playing that kind of stuff on TV if the Elite were not coming back. I think everyone can bank on that, right? It was even reported yesterday that Kenny and the Bucks were at Dynamite last night. I think Meltzer added to that, you know, they were mingling backstage. They were going to see people, and there was a very good vibe, good atmosphere. People were happy to see them back. Look, the return to TV is imminent. And if you had any doubts about that, well, the video you saw last night on TV clears it up. I hope none of you are sitting here going, oh, well, AEW put out that video because the Elite aren't coming back. Obviously, they're bashing. No. Obviously, they're going to work this. I think they're going to come back with a fresh coat of paint kind of thing. And the main clue, I think, to that, or the main, yeah, you know, I'm going to say, I just realized I said the word clue as if we're running after QR codes here. But the main thing that I observed in the short video, without, you know, poring over every detail, is when we got to the AEW logo at the end, which vanished, the E disappeared before the AEW. And so all mentions of the Elite are evaporating, right? So what I think, and I think it's a good idea for them to return with, you know, a new vibe, a new presentation, something different to really mark a spot here, create a milestone in time in which we're like, look, we're moving forward from this point on, right? I think that's important because, look, I think at this point it's pretty clear. CM Punk's not coming back. Now, all reporting points to him, unless this is a massive work, and if it is a massive work, no one should be mad at it. You shouldn't be mad if you got worked here. The chances of it at this point are less than 1% of it being a work, just to be clear. But all signs point to CM Punk not coming back, that his contract is being bought out. Of course, we have the news that Ace Steel was released from the company. And that, you know, if we're talking about the Elite returning, then clearly this means that whatever needed to be substantiated, what negotiated on CM Punk's side has been settled. We're ready to move forward here. And then we got a report early this morning. Not early, late last night, I should say, from the time I'm recording this on October 27th. Reporting from Wrestling Inc.'s Nick Houseman, saying that, saying that he reached out to CM Punk's camp in this situation, and there's some tidbits here that were revealed. Let me run this through you. I'm going to read the article off of Wrestling Inc. We've been told that AEW has not reached out to Punk, since the incident following the All Out media scrum in which Punk and his friend and trainer Ace Steel reportedly got into a backstage brawl with AEW EVPs Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Sources indicate that after the brawl, Punk was asked to stay quiet and agreed to do so. From the perspective of Punk's camp, the scrum itself, which had become the talk of the wrestling world due to Punk's comments on Colt Cabana, Hangman Adam Page, and the Elite, didn't seem like a big deal and only escalated once Punk's locker room door was kicked in and accidentally hit Punk's dog Larry in the face. At a pre-scheduled veterinarian appointment a few days later, Punk was informed that two of Larry's teeth had been knocked loose and had to be removed. Wrestling Inc. has been told that Punk felt threatened and reacted in a legal way under Illinois' Castle Doctrine laws, which allow for the use of force in defense of a person in their dwelling. At this time, there is no litigation against Punk on behalf of anyone involved. It was also relayed to us that Steele's wife, Lucy, was in the room during the incident, but has not been interviewed as part of the internal investigation into the matter. Finally, we were informed that following Hangman Adam Page's comments on a May episode of AEW Dynamite alluding to backstage concerns about Punk, there was distrust on Punk's end going into his AEW World Championship match with Page at Double or Nothing 2022, and that Punk was concerned that the predetermined match would break down into a real physical fight. So that's the report coming from Nick Houseman straight from the horse's mouth. Now, I want to say this because I think it's important that I reiterate this properly because I've mentioned it before. I think one of the... Everyone who's been reporting in this situation have been very clear as to where their information has been coming from, either the Elite side or CM Punk side. And I appreciate that, right? I think that does help the comprehension of what's going on and the analysis that people like I can provide with a certain amount of where we can feel a little grounded in the comments that are coming forward, right? Because there's a lot of stuff here that came out that had we not known from which side it's coming, you could go, oh shit, this could be real. Whereas, you know, this information is a little tainted, a little biased. If the information coming out is from a specific camp, so you know they have an agenda to push. They have a story to tell. So you know what I mean, right? I hope you understand what I mean. So that I appreciate it. I appreciate Nick Houseman doing it here as well, where he didn't just like, sources told me. No, he's like, look, I talked to CM Punk's group. This is what they had to say, kind of thing. There's a lot of stuff to unpack here. But look, here's the thing. First of all, we're bringing back the concept. First of all, we're creating the idea from CM Punk's camp that the scrum was not a big deal. What was the big deal? It's like, okay, come on now. Now this is some retconning. CM Punk knew what he was doing. When he started spewing everything he did, it was not a big deal. Otherwise, he would not have sat down angry, frustrated with his lines rehearsed. Like there's no way this was like something where he's like, oh, this will just brush off. No, of course, he's saying the EVPs that he says he works with children. He says the EVPs couldn't run a target. He's calling out Hangman Page. Like, come on now, okay? Let's be honest. That's bullshit. And it really So that's bullshit. We're coming back with the concept that the door was kicked in, right? Which I think has been disproved multiple times by various eyewitnesses to the thing that the door was not kicked in. And if something happened to his dog, to Larry, right? Poor Larry. Larry had no business getting involved in this in any situation. And I do feel bad if something happened. Now, what I'm questioning here is, why was this information relayed at this point here, as opposed to at the very beginning when we were getting reports, particularly from the elite side, that Kenny Omega carried the dog out of the room? Why didn't the CM Punk side go, do you know why he carried him out? Because my dog was bleeding at the mouth, kind of thing. No, because that stuff didn't. Like, this is highly, highly suspicious. And I'll get to that in a second here. He said he felt threatened. The Castle Doctrine laws, which is... I teared up with laughter when I saw that. You know, it's like... it's like Florida's stand your ground laws, whatever they call them, right? My home has been invaded. I can defend myself whichever way I want, according to the law. And I'm sorry, folks. This is funny as hell. This is probably the funniest bit that came out. This is going to be a bit moving forward. I'm gonna use it as a bit. Calling for the Castle Doctrine laws. Made note of the fact that Lucy A. Steele's wife had not been interviewed in the incident. And apparently this is a big deal. This is a problem. And then learning that CM Punk was worried that Adam Page was going to shoot on him at Double or Nothing. And yet, despite this fear, they still went in and they acted like pros and everything happened. And CM Punk cut the Adam Page promo after Double or Nothing. So what is even going on? You know, and then he brings up Adam Page again at All Out. When the match is done, has been buried and done, and CM Punk did the weirdo call-out promo, right? Which I talked about on the podcast this week, which you should listen to. It's clear to everyone that had it been anyone else than CM Punk going into the ring and calling out Hangman Page like he did, they would have been reprimanded / fired. But CM Punk is the guy. He's the draw. He's the top dude. You're not gonna throw him away, kind of thing. Anyway, I'm reading all of this, and then in the meantime, and then this morning, Dave Meltzer, right? He hits the message board, his message board, right? And he just clarifies everything, and essentially, for lack of a better term here, he just knocks everything down. This is what he says. Look, he says, there's obvious contradictions, especially given those close to Punk have been regularly in contact with me being Dave Meltzer, of course, not Warren Hayes. He says, the Lucy Guy story, Lucy Guy, I.A. Steele's wife, was reported weeks ago. The door story, they walk back on. And 7 weeks later, the dog story surfaces out of the blue. No way, and I mean no way, that's not the first thing they tell me about the dog. And I agree. That is the first thing you say. You know, I don't talk, I'm involved in public relations in my, you know, in my daily work. And that would be the easiest layup of all time to get public support on your side, is to come out and say, the elite fucked up my dog. But no, the opposite happened. It's like the elite saved the dog. So no way. No way. And Dave Ottwright says this. I wish I could tell you because it would shut you all up. Anyway, multiple eyewitnesses said that the dog story was a total fabrication. If it was true, the end of the investigation would have been that Punk would have been the one staying. Look, when this came out last night, I slept on it. I woke up this morning. I reread everything over again with the updates and Dave's stuff. Even before Dave came out, and I was like, look, I don't know. Look, if you start by saying, you know, the scrum wasn't a big deal, and that you're mad someone didn't get interviewed, right? Because if you're not mentioning that Lucy didn't get interviewed unless you're unhappy with the results of the investigation, right? Isn't that the underlying current that we have here? Is that Punk's side is not happy with the result of the investigation? Anything resulting, any new revelations that come out of here should immediately be considered shaky at best. At best. Because he literally, or at least the camp, right? The CM Punk camp, just flat out said, you know, it's like, we don't understand. The scrum wasn't a big deal. And as Dave pointed out, they walked back again on the door thing. They said the door was kicked in. Was the door kicked in? Yes. And then it was turned out. No, it wasn't. And then somebody went, no, the door wasn't kicked in. That was, you know, maybe some embellishment, but they're back with that. I mean, this is some, the camp is not happy with how negotiations turned out. So what does that mean? It means CM Punk is on the way out. And I see there's no other course here. We're going to get an announcement at some point that officializes everything. CM Punk is going to sit out the rest of his contract. I'm convinced Tony Khan is going to pay him for whatever's left. And then we're going to see what happens moving forward. But everything at this point in time directly indicates Punk is done with the company. We've got Elite promos coming back. We've got, you know, the CM Punk sign tried to retcon stuff because they're not happy with how the investigation turned out, clearly. Because if they had been, they would not be saying this stuff. If they were satisfied, if everything had gone CM Punk's way and Kenny and the Bucks had been gone, you wouldn't have Punk's camp going, yeah, you know what? The scrum wasn't that big a deal. I don't know why everyone got excited about it. Lucy Guy didn't get interviewed. That's bullshit. And my dog got his face kicked in. God, look, like I said, bless Larry if he did. I think it's all bullshit. That's my take on the whole situation anyway, and I think it's pretty fair. I think it's fair to think that this whole setup, that all this news that's been leaking is a last-ditch thing, you know, a last-ditch, a few final jabs. And he talks to Nick Houseman. He talks to Nick Houseman, who is the guy that Punk went after at the scrum, right? That got all up in his face, you know, as you're friends with Colt, right? Remember that? I don't understand. I don't know. No, look, I gotta admit, I don't quite understand the strategy at this point to be like, but I also do, because these are just like final bitter jabs. Just final bitter, I'm pissed off statements before CM Punk rides into the sunset. Anyway, let's talk about the show. Again, like I said, a show I feel was made for Warren Hayes. Good to great wrestling throughout the card. Minimal nonsense. Everything made sense. From the promotion that doesn't create stories, as I'm told. As the business of pro wrestling honchos like to remind us. The Blackpool Combat Club duo of Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta started off the show defeating Chris Jericho and Daniel Garcia. A brilliant match, I thought. Well constructed, well put together, where the BCC boys relatively outclassed the Jericho Appreciation Society here. Great tag team work between Utes and Claudio. Claudio even does a little tribute to that legendary hot tag he had in WWE, you know, that we often see gifs of. He did a little nod to himself, which I thought was funny. Utes does a Topi Conhilo, a stereo hammer and anvil, elbows by the club. Claudio Castagnoli, big swings. Chris Jericho, while having Daniel Garcia up on his shoulders in a Samoan position and fireman's carry position. Jesus. Neutralizer for the win. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, what an interesting thing we just saw here. Because because Claudio and Wheeler had chemistry. They worked as a tag team and everything was fine. I was like, this is very interesting. And it was a good match, hot out the gate. And you understand why this happened immediately after, because we have Renee Paquette, who is interviewing Bryan Danielson backstage. He's in the he's in Gorilla, or whatever it is they call it. They've given it a name now. And he says it's a little he's a little frustrated because he lost to Chris Jericho, because Daniel Garcia turned his back on him, and because Wheeler Yuta started speaking out of turn during the sit-down interview that they had last week. He says he knows a lot of people hate Sammy Guevara, but he himself has no problems with him, aside his smug face in his stupid vlog, which is, I think, the reason why everyone hates Sammy Guevara, which is actually pretty funny. And then Yuta arrives, fresh off the match. He's coming back from backstage, and he's like, yeah, you're mad. You're frustrated? Well, I'm glad you're frustrated. Because you know what? Look at what Claudio and I just did. We went and beat Jericho and Garcia as a team. And there, right there. Then you're like, look, there's your story. This is what they started talking about last week. This is the seed they planted last week with Yuta and Danielson. And they're driving it home today to show that, look, maybe Danielson is the odd man out here. Maybe he's the guy who's the problem. Because look, Claudio and Yuta hit the ring. They defeat both. Two of, at least, Ring of Honor champions. The world champion, the pure champion, they beat them handedly. So Yuta, he's sort of talking shit at Danielson at this point. Claudio pops in. He tries to keep the peace. That's what he says. He's like, look, I just beat the world champion, the Ring of Honor world champion. Danielson, you're going to go out there and kick ass. And it's Wheeler's birthday, which it shoot was, you know. So it's like, look, you go out there, beat Guevara, and then we'll all get back and talk like adults. And I'm going to say a resounding fuck you to everyone who says there are no stories in here, because not only do we have a story here, but it is a logical continuation of a story that has run its course. This is coming out. This is a logical, completely logical follow-up to the Garcia-Danielson stuff that had been happening with Jericho interfering, where Garcia didn't know where his allegiances lay. So that story feels wrapped up. We're done. Jericho beat Danielson. That was the little flag on the pudding. Is that an expression? Let's make it an expression if it's not. And then from there, the week after, we've got Wheeler Yuta going, Brian, Daniel, whatever your name is, how did you not see this coming? You're an idiot. Garcia was using you. Danielson's like, ugh. And then Yuta comes in and he's like, look, Claudio and I were working fine. What's your fucking problem, man? The BCC... So it's not only a story that we're creating here. It's a logical sequence. We're following events. We're not just pulling something out of our ass here. And I would argue with you that the Bullet Club, the Blackpool Combat Club stuff ever since it started has been the absolute best shit in AEW, bar none. Whether it's storytelling, in-ring, it has been delivering from A to Z, top to bottom. We can even draw this back to when Danielson and Mox were feuding, which led to the creation of. It has been nothing but spectacular. It is unquestionably the best stuff that AEW does week in, week out, has to do with these guys. It's been extraordinary. How can you, in good faith, mind you, sit here, look, and just take a minute to sit back and think about what has brought us to this place where Wheeler Yuta and Bryan Danielson are at each other's throats? How can you sit back and look at this and not go, man, this has been masterful. This has been great. And little subtle things throughout the entire way. Look, Danielson always comes out of the heel tunnel. This is not even surprising behavior on Danielson's part. He's clearly supposed to be a bastard. He comes out of the heel tunnel, even though he's in a group which is considered to be a babyface group. Claudio, Yuta, they come out of the babyface tunnel. Moxley, he comes out of the audience, like I've talked about, because he's a man of the people. That's a whole other thing. Everything has been there. All the groundwork to where we're at right now was set. It's been delivered with precision and story beats every week, as opposed to other wrestling companies who want to give you the impression that their stories are progressing and so on and so forth when they're not, where you're just spinning in a hamster wheel, where you're at the same place week after week. Look, let's just straight out say it. The Dexter Lumis Miz stuff, that is not a story that's advancing. We're at the same place every week, every week. Lumis stalks Miz. Miz reacts to being stalked. And there's nothing that progresses. The stalking doesn't change. It just keeps happening and happening. That's all that happens. Hijinks, maybe, but the story is in the exact same place, and they've been doing this for 2 months now. We've had ups and downs and highs and lows within the Blackpool Combat Club from its onset. And y'all gonna sit here and tell me there are no stories in AEW? And this is not even the last. This is not the last example of a story that we're getting tonight. Let's move on. The next segment we have is the Jericho Appreciation Society backstage. Chris Jericho is upset that Claudio won with a baseball bat in the ring. Perfect old school shit heel nonsense. I love it. You know why? Because Jericho's been cheating his whole way. And now he's going to be the paragon of virtue in this? Guys, come on. Jericho opens a challenge to any former Ring of Honor champion to fight him next week. And we're talking any champion. This was a good little segment the other day. And one of the hidden highlights of this segment here was Cool Hand Aang trying to put the moves on Anna Jay. He goes, you know, he does one of these and he chokes. Which was great. So yeah, next week Jericho is fighting a Ring of Honor champion. Of course, the speculation is going up and down. I think one of the most favored picks is Nigel McGuinness. Nigel does have a long history of injuries. Brain injuries. So there's a lot of people who are questioning that. He himself came out on Twitter a couple of weeks ago saying, I wish everyone would stop speculating on my health. I'm good to go kind of thing. Look, we'll see how things go moving forward, but it's not this. We did say a Ring of Honor champion doesn't mean a world champion. And right now AEW still has Ring of Honor champions in their employ outside of the ones that are currently champions, like Adam Cole, like Christopher Daniels. Those are also possibilities as well. We'll see what happens. Personally, I'd love to see Davey Richards. That's very personal. We had an AEW World Tag Team Title number one contendership match. Swerve and Our Glory took on FTR and beat them. You had the Acclaimed that are showing up, that show up here to watch the match from the top of the ramp. Great reaction, of course. So good idea to just put them on TV, keep that vibe going. Good match between these two teams here. FTR try a big rig early on Keith Lee to make us understand that Keith Lee is big and a big rig is going to be really hard to land. So, and that's cool because it sets up drama for later, and I like that. Soon after that spot, Keith Lee leapfrogs both Cash and Dax and crossbodies both dudes. Lots of near falls between Dax and Swerve. A dragon suplex by Cash on Swerve as well. Assisted sit-out powerbomb by Swerve and Our Glory, which was pretty dope. We get all sorts of excellent big-time offense by all four of these dudes. We get a superplex splash combo by FTR on Keith Lee. And we get the big rig. But Swerve breaks up the pin. Cash goes after him. He gets knocked out by the Gun Brothers, the Gun Boys, the Gun Club, who are ringside being goofs. But they knock out Cash. Referee doesn't see it. And while the ref is still distracted, Swerve low blows Dax. Keith Lee did not see it either. Slam pin. They win the match. They are the number one contenders for the AEW World titles. Tag team titles. And post-match, the Ass Boys and Swerve and Our Glory attack FTR, but the Acclaim rush down to make the save. So look at all the multiple stories being told in this match here. First and foremost, of course, Swerve and Our Glory becoming number one contenders for the Acclaim title. So we're doing a full circle type of thing. It's like, you're not done with us, kids. We're still coming for you. That's cool. I thought they had a fantastic match at, they had two fantastic matches together. The match at All Out was a highlight. They had a great match at Arthur Ashe a couple of weeks ago. This is good. Let's make a rubber match. Let's three-peat this. I'm cool with that. They're probably going to save it for Full Gear, and that's 100% okay. So we have that. We have Swerve, who's still being a little cheater son of a bitch that Keith Lee would otherwise not approve of, but Lee did not see anything. But we know Lee has tensions with Swerve. So we're continuing to just add little elements here. And everyone sat back and looked at this and went, oh, Keith Lee is not going to be happy when he rewatches that tape. Because you know that's what's going to happen. Keith Lee is not going to walk back into Dynamite last week and be like, and ignore what happened. He's going to be like, look, I rewatched the ending. Swerve, we've talked about this. We got to stop this, right? So that schism is continuing to separate. No long-term story telling, right? Fuck y'all. This has been being told for months at this point. So that's another story we're telling here. We have then FTR and the Ass Boys, which is being set up. Now, clearly this is being, you know, they've been talking about the Ring of Honor titles. This is not the first incursion of the Gun Club into FTR business, but this is the first time that they cost them an important match. So I fully expect FTR to be like, fuck you guys. We're getting this done now. So I'm fully expecting at Final Battle to see FTR versus the Gun Club for the Ring of Honor belts. I'm fully expecting that. So there's your, so a very important story beat to that little tale that's been bubbling in the back, stay in the back of our minds, now is going to be a front-facing feud for sure. Plus on top of that, the story that continues is the AEW World Tag Team titles eluding FTR again. And that is some long-term storytelling right there. You know, a lot of people get annoyed at FTR and so I don't understand it. And I think people get worked and they don't want to admit it, and it's okay to get worked, but everything that Dax has been setting up about Tony Khan, book us, Tony Khan, give us a shot at the title, so on, that is part of the story. I don't believe this is all necessarily. I think there might be roots in it, but I don't think it's all we're so disgruntled, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's what it is. Like, we want the top prize. For us, it's the top prize. And if you're a fan of AEW, if you watch the program, and if you're a tag team in AEW, you should be saying to yourself, the AEW tag team titles are the top prize. People, you know, I see people reacting like, well, people should be happy. You know, FTR should just be happy and shut the fuck up. They have three sets of titles, but not the titles that matter in kayfabe to these wrestlers. The AEW world title, world tag team titles should be the prize, should be the thing that they're gunning for. Fuck, it's slipping again. Slipped away from them, another opportunity. How can you not get behind this? How can you not see the story? Oh, it's not being spoon-fed, I guess. You know, you know, wrestling for grown-ups. Sorry. It's the only way I can see this. So that's it. So we got all of these story bumps, all of these little elements feeding into four different tales right now. Four different, is that four? Am I counting right? One, two, three. Four. Four stories, right? That's it. The problems between Swerve and Keith Lee. The Acclaimed and Swerve in Your Glory going at it again. That's, you know, a new bump in that tail right there. The Gun Club and FTR finally, like, something significant happening so that FTR will be very pissed off at them. And FTR just being fingers away from getting another shot at the AEW World titles and can't do it. I think all of this makes sense. I think it's great. The day, and here's what's, this is the thing that, again, I've talked about this and why I feel like hot take culture is poisoning the way we approach criticism in wrestling and most media in general, right? Because everyone is like, oh, you know, I got to react. I got to react quickly. I got to give an instant reaction. And sometimes you just have to take a minute to think back at this. The fact that FTR still can't get the titles right now is going to lead to the hugest of fucking pops when they do get their hands on the titles again. Don't you guys and gals and non-binary pals see that? I'm convinced this is the path we're walking down. Convinced. Let's move along. Renee Paquette interviews Saraya backstage. Renee and Saraya are happy to see each other because they're, you know where they come from. Renee calls her the Joan Jett to her blondie. Britt Baker arrives and she tries to start shit and Renee's like, Renee loses her cool. She's like, no, this isn't how you do it. And if, you know, if you guys want to talk, we're going to talk it out, but this isn't the way to do it, kids. Like the mom in Renee is coming out. This was kind of weird. I'm not going to lie. Kind of a weird segment, but I think what this is going to lead to is a sit-down interview with Renee mediating the two. I think would be interesting in here? If Britt leaned into the fact that she was very, very chummy all of a sudden with Saraya, and she was like, oh, you're such good friends, right? And she starts getting bitchy at Renee on top of that. She probably will. Then we get Renee Paquette again interviewing Maxwell Jacob Friedman on the stage. Look, this was another great promo from Max. He's impersonating Jon Moxley, which was pretty funny. Talking about mashing bones, drinking blood, and gargling piss. I sometimes hope that some of the things that are said in these promos is shit that happens not happens, but it's like words that are spoken backstage, because we've never heard John Moxley talk about gargling piss, but maybe, you know, maybe it has some kind of connection backstage. Anyway, he calls John mid. With all due respect, Renee tells him, you can't just use all due respect as a get out of disrespect free card. And he says, well, with all due respect, shut your mouth. It's good stuff. I thought that they were going to, that he was going to lean into, you know, their relationship, they being Renee and John, but he didn't. So, all right. This was, and then Stokely Hathaway. So, you know, I'm trying to say too many things at once. Apologies. Max puts over the fact that he's not going to use his diamond ring when he fights Moxley because he doesn't need it. And he's, you know, and he puts over very babyface themes and he keeps referring to Virginia. What do you guys think? You know, and he's playing up to the crowd. And then Stokely comes out and he says, this is, you know, your Stokely comes out and he's, and he says, look, I'm going to cut you some slack, but if you interfere in my match in the Moxley match tonight, you guys are going to be fired. And you know, so we set up all of this. Now, I know a lot of people are like, oh, they're turning MJF babyface. I know that's like the common theme right now, but quite frankly, for being honest with each other, this smell, I can smell the swerve a mile away at this point. Like, we're not going to end up with a babyface MJF. He's trying too hard. This is, you know, part of his thing. We've seen him done something similar in the past with CM Punk, where he tries to get our sympathy, get on our good side, but then, you know, returns to being the asshole. This is what's going to happen. I'm convinced. Will MJF be able to do it? He's going to just turn out to be the devil. That's who he is. He called himself the devil again in the promo last night. So he's fucking with us. We get a Warjo video package setting up their match with the Kingdom. Matt Taven, Mike Bennett, and Maria Kanellis. We're all signed this week, by the way, for an AEW contract. Good for Matt Taven. No, good for everyone, actually. That's just funny, because, you know, Matt Taven is a bit of a meme. And, you know, I'm happy for Mike and Maria. Mike is, from everything I understand, is such a good guy and a good human. And I'm glad he can still continue to collect paychecks while doing what he loves. Same for Maria, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not, but, you know, just focusing in a little bit on Mike Bennett here, because I know this is another guy where a lot of people go, oh, he's so unremarkable. Well, I mean, not everyone is, you know, if I feel sometimes that if we left people on the street book, put together a promotion and book matches, it'd just be like they'd only hire like fucking, you know, John Moxley's and Steve Austin types and The Rock types, and, you know, you wouldn't really have a mid-card. You know what I mean? I'm sure Mike Bennett understands this. He's a smart guy. I think there's a lot of value. Bryan Danielson defeated Sammy Guevara. Not much heat for our boy Sammy here, if you ask me. I think the crowd was a little indifferent. Even if I were to give you my expert opinion on heat. Danielson lands a beautiful Romero special. Sammy delivers blows to Danielson, who no-sells the moves and starts leaning into them. So that's also something new that he's been doing. On the floor, an acai moonsault by Guevara, and he does the corner dropkick on Danielson back in the ring as well. He starts kicking Danielson, but that only fires Danielson up again, who gets on the offense and dumps Sammy to the floor with a big dive following up. Guevara does the Andrade moonsault into a standing moonsault thing, which got a big, big laugh from me. Danielson goes up top. Guevara runs up and Spanish flies off of it, which was cool. But then Danielson starts stringing offense together, poison Rana, Busaiku knee, head stomps, and then he twists Guevara up in a triangle hold, elbows him into oblivion. Danielson wins. More great aggressive stuff from Danielson. Fun little match they had here. I enjoyed it. Danielson is... You're getting 15 minutes of Bryan Danielson on a Wednesday night on a random Dynamite, and people will still find a way to complain. They'll still be like, why isn't so-and-so on TV? What? It's so fascinating to me how people will then sit down, watch a fantastic two-hour wrestling show, and will still come out of it going, why didn't they book this guy and this guy? And you got a fantastic show. We get a Warjo video package. No, we talked about that. We get Rey Fénix and Alex Abrahantes backstage. And they're talking about Penta's match earlier, later on in the evening. And then they think Penta's going to win. And Fénix is like, I can't say Fénix without coming off as completely cringe. I know it's not the exact pronounce. It's not the exact way to pronounce. It should be Fénix instead of Fénix. But I feel like a fraud. Saying Fénix, it doesn't, like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I sound like a fraud saying it. So we'll just stick with Fénix. Rey Fénix says he could also be a double champion, like Penta. And Alex then says that Fénix should go after the All Atlantic Championship. Christian Cage then arrives out of nowhere with Luchasaurus saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. We could also be an All Atlantic Champion. And then Orange Cassidy just strolls in. Faces the camera, never looks at either dude. And he says, like, I hear you guys are talking about me. I hear you guys are talking about this. And he pulls out the title out of his backpack. I was going to say knapsack and backpack. So we're getting that as a triple threat next week. Orange Cassidy versus Fénix versus Luchasaurus. And people are like, what? Again, a triple threat? And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What do you want? What do you as a viewing audience want? Because I can point to the point, to the moment in time, a month ago. Maybe a little over a month. Remember what? The All Atlantic title's never on TV. And now it's on TV. It's a triple threat. Look, I'm not that big a fan of triple threats. But for the All Atlantic title, a mid-card title, I don't really care. And this is going to be a match where everyone's strengths are going to be put to use and everyone's weaknesses are going to be hidden. What more do you... This is fine. It's a Dynamite. It's a... Like... And it... People get bent out of shape for the weirdest titles. It's like the whole never title situation in New Japan with Carl Anderson right now. It's so weird. Jamie Hayter defeated Riho in an electric little match they got here. Look at... This is what I'm talking about. You get here... And you have two great workers. And you just let them work. What happens? Crowd gets into it. You get dueling chants. You get the whole nine yards. Because Rio's over. Jamie Hayter's over. They don't need to sit around cutting promos on each other. They just need to work. Because you know what? They're both Stardom alumni, right? They're both trained in Joshi. So just let them go. That's what they're built for. Riho... Clearly, the manager of this match here, Jamie Hayter, hate a lot of Riho's offense. Riho reverses a Cazador into a double stomp. Riho does the big splash. This is like her signature now. That big suicide splash off the top rope to the floor. She goes for a Tiger Fang kick. It's blocked by Jamie Hayter, but Riho instead lands a Northern Light suplex on her. Jamie does get a brain buster off, one of the sole bits of big offense she gets in, but Riho hits a Hurricane Rana and a great reversal out of some move attempts into a code red, just smooth as butter. Backbreaker by Jamie Hayter, dragon suplex by Riho, but Jamie Hayter hits the, let's not call it the Rainmaker for the win, because let's be honest, she's ending the match with a spinning short arm clothesline. Come on. Fuck off. It's a Rainmaker. But I love how the spinning short arm clothesline for the win is like a Rainmaker. And it suits her, too. She just leans into it. Beautiful lariat. She's not just like giving it. She leans right into it. Like, she delivers it as a finisher. It's great stuff. And after the match, Toni Storm comes to the stage, holds up the title. Guess what that means, boys and girls? It means Jamie Hayter's next in line. Again, another little story bit thrown right here. We've got something new coming out of all of this. You know, Toni Storm, she'd been feuding with Britt's group, you know, and she'd been recruiting other women to come fight with her, you know, in tag team matches, Sheeta and so on and so forth. And now, all of these things have all been leading to this. Again, I'm going to say it again this week. It's New Japan style booking when it comes to the women. Multi-person matches, setting up little stories, setting up teases to something. And now we lead to this. And everyone goes, well, of course. Of course Jamie did, because now she knocked out a former champion in the division. Of course Toni Storm comes out. She has a legit claim on this. Regardless of the ranking. I don't give a shit about the ranking. The storytelling was very good. Renee Paquette is interviewing Eddie Kingston backstage. She says, how are you, Eddie? She says, a lot of your friends have been showing concern for you. And he's got, you know, this plastic forced smile on. He says, oh, I'm great. I'm wonderful. That little thing where they talk here, it's great. He's having a blast. And this is a real smile, he says. And he says, I want to stop worrying. And he completely diverts the interview. And he says, let's talk about John Moxley, our boy Johnny, right? This is going to be honest. It's going to be hard for Johnny. Penta's my boy, but you know, sis. He calls Renee sis right at some point. But he thinks he's going to take it, and he says, and everyone should leave me alone. No stories in AEW. Here we go. This has been again just little seeds, where we have our tease going. You know what? He flat out said it. I think it was last week or the week before to Kingston. Look, Eddie, we got your back, but you know, like this job, you need this job. You know what happened in other places, you know, signifying the fact that he's his own worst enemy, that he's been fired from everywhere else because of who he is. Clearly making an attachment, a connection between what happened with what happened between him and Sammy Guevara without mentioning it all outright. It's like, bro, you gotta cool your jets, so on and so forth. We're going somewhere with this. Darby Allin gets a video explaining that, saying Sting hasn't been around. Sting told him that, you know, he can't give up, and Darby asked for some time alone to get back on his feet. So we've explained why Sting is not going to be on TV for a while. And then this connects to the Jay Lethal stuff. This is one of these things that's been dragging on too much. And for everything that I loved about this edition of Dynamite, you know, I'm really done with the Jay Lethal, Darby Allin stuff. I wish they'd pull the trigger on it. Just get it done. It doesn't feel important. It doesn't feel significant. It's been dragging everything. It feels like everything they've been doing with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh, every feud they've been getting into has always been dragging. It was the same thing with the Miro stuff. It wasn't Miro with the Samoa Joe. Excuse me, the Samoa Joe stuff. I mean, look, we really need to move on. And then the main event: John Moxley defeated Penta El Zero Miedo to maintain his AEW World Championship. This was pretty good, but maybe not as brutal as a lot of us were expecting. Especially after, because you know. Tony saw the pictures and everyone going nuts about Penta's performance at the AAA last weekend in Mexico. And he was like, okay, well, this is my main event. Like, for sure, right? But I think we all expected something. This match was a strong match. Don't get me wrong, well worked, but I think it missed the second gear. They start with a hockey fight. Mox to the floor. Topikan Hilo by Penta. He fucks with Mox on the floor. Brings him back into the ring. Mox hits a belly-to-belly overhead into the buckles, which was cool. Penta snaps the arm. Mox DDTs Penta on the steps. And he goes for the King Kong Lariat as well. He lands it. And he tries for it earlier in the evening, but Penta ducks it. And you know what was cool? And I know there's going to be a lot of people who are going to have an issue with this probably. Maybe not viewers, listeners of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, because y'all are a cut above. I think it's cool that they emphasized, oh, it's the King Kong Lariat. This is the move that took out Adam Page. Now that is some old school wrestling greatness right there, where the unfortunate accident happened. You know, Page is going to be fine. The injuries are not as serious as we anticipated, which is good. But now Mox, whenever he comes to throw that, commentary will be like, oh shit, this is the one that brutalized that baby face that everyone likes. Remember? That's cool as hell. And they put that over twice. Twice. So that's and that's what you should do in wrestling. You got a move that hurts a guy that creates there should be a mystique created around it, right? So I like it. So he does hit it on Penta. A little later on, Penta hits the Fear Factor, but Moxley kicks out. He hits double Death Riders for the win, or a Paradigm Shift and a Death Rider. What is the difference? The Death Rider is the high elevated one. Is that it? Okay. But they're both double underhook DDTs. It's like, come on. I don't want to start calling the difference between a Paradigm Shift and a Death Rider. Excalibur, I love you. Well, let's just call it the Death Rider. It is a much better name regardless. Rolls off the tongue much more easily. And after the match, Stokely and the boys arrive, the Firm, and they beat the shit out of Moxley. MJF is conflicted. He pops out and he's, should I come help? And he goes back. But then he comes back out. And he comes down for the rescue, but he's overwhelmed. This is too much of a numbers game. Morrissey, Moriarty, Ethan Page, the Guns. He gets put through a table. Again, if you don't see MJF being at the basis of all this setup here, and just being a manipulative, evil human that's trying to get us to be on his side, work, play with our emotions. If you don't see it, I don't know what to tell you. But it's a fun ride. He's doing it well. If you believe, that's cool. Because that's what he wants you to believe. He wants us to believe that he's a good guy. That he's in a crisis of conscience. But he's not. Just wait till the match at Full Gear. He'll be an ass. He'll be the devil again. Trust me. This will probably set up some shenanigans on the way too. So again, we're getting some story bumps here. We're getting a little swerve in the road here where it's not just going to be Mox and MJF cutting promos on each other for the next few weeks. We've got the Firm involved in this that are going to probably eat some squash matches, and that's fine because that's what they're for. They're a mid-card act playing on a lane that they don't belong, where they don't belong, so they're gonna get chewed up and spit out, and that's fine because that's what they're for. Great finish, a good old fashioned Nitro finish. Love to see if Eric Bischoff thought that it sucked or not. When I say love, I don't really care. I thought this was an excellent Dynamite because there were very little compromises that were made here. You know, sometimes you'll be like, well, this show was good because it set up a lot of stories, but the wrestling wasn't all that great. We didn't compromise here. We had good to great wrestling. My favorite match of the night was the tag team match, unquestionably. Everything else was solid, good, plus on top of that, storyline development everywhere. This is the prototype. This right here, the October 26th edition of AEW Dynamite is the prototype show for Warren Hayes to love your wrestling program. That's exactly it. Yeah, it speaks to me on so many levels. It's just great stuff. Gonna wrap it up on that note. If you haven't already, subscribe to the channel. Leave a review. Leave a 5-star rating on Spotify. Do whatever you can to show some love. Leave a like. Leave some comments. What did you think about Dynamite? God, I love talking about wrestling. So come talk wrestling with me. You can also join the Discord. The link is in the description. In the meantime, hope you have a good rest of your week. We'll see you next Tuesday for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Otherwise, I'll be back next Thursday for another Dynamite review. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week. I'm saying it over again. We'll just see you next time. We'll just see you next time. There you go. We'll see you next time.